Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
There is a place where time stands still, where nature is harsh and demanding, where only the quick and the strong and the deadly can survive. This place is no place for civilized man.
I want my land.
Took it in the guts, Barry.
All you've got to do now is pass the Australian culture test. Three simple questions, three correct answers,
did you get all this
and
together?
You go through that doorway to the greatest little country in the world. The
Good morning, this is Annie for Showreel, and today I've got a special treat. It's a Q&A that was held at Cinema Nova. It was a little while ago because I've been holding it back because I've had other things to show you and share with you. But it was done on the 17th of February, and it was about Jimper. Jimper is this fantastic film. It's the new film by Sophie Hyde, who, you know, a long time ago, as she talks about in this conversation, that began her filmmaking career, actually began with documentaries, but she came to our notice with about 12 or so years ago with her first major feature, dramatic feature called 52 Tuesdays, which was, if you remember, was exploring the notion of a child spending 52 weekends with her mother, who was transgender and was changing their sex gender profile. And this was what the film was about. It was about the human relationships that were growing over that 52 weeks. A fantastic film, absolutely fantastic film. And every film that Sophie Hyde has made ever since has been an exploration of the frontiers of human relationships. Very thoughtful and generous and interesting investigations. Now, Jimper is a very personal film because it's really based on her family's experiences. Now, Jimper is her, Jim was her father who came out during, he was already married, he had children, came out, and you have to go to the film and see the whole permutation of it and how the development of the family retained its integrity to, through the change in the social identification of the members of the family. Anyway, he ultimately goes to live in Amsterdam as a openly gay person. And Jimper is the name he took in relation to his grandchild, who is in this film played by Sophie Hyde's daughter, transgender person, Aud Mason Hyde, who plays Frances. And I suppose, in a way, having some people play yourself or playing versions of yourself and your history is the thing that's really most interesting about the conversation, which happened during this Q&A. The Q&A is handled by the 3RRR's film program MC. So. And the voices that you hear are Sophie Hyde, Aud Mason Hyde, and Daniel Henshed, who plays Harry, the father in the duo, the trio. Anyway, worth going to see. It's still being played at Nova. It's an absolutely life-affirming film, absolutely stunning piece of filmmaking.
Oh.
Firstly, congratulations on Jinpa.
Thank you.
What a beautiful film. I'm still feeling very emotional from my viewing of it. I actually remember being in this exact cinema about 13 years ago watching Fiji Two Tuesday.
Really?
Yes. Firstly, you co-wrote it again with Matthew Cormack. And over those past 13 years, you have made 3 feature films and 2 miniseries. But I think that's so many parallels between that first dramatic feature and Jinpa. I was thinking about you're again returning to the parent-child relationship. There's a focus on a time of transition or being in limbo or flux, and there's an exploration of sexuality and gender, and also a very meta examination of the art of filmmaking itself and what's required. Do you think that this is a film that you were always going to make one day?
It's certainly true that there is a kind of parallel between 52 Tuesdays and this, and it's a really different time for me to be making it, and so much has happened for me. I get the chance to be somebody who delves into ideas about what it means to be a human and how we treat each other and how we live, and that it's kind of interesting to think about doing that over, you know, 15 years. Things come from different places. 52 Tuesdays came from an idea about time and a kind of breaking of an industrial model. So we shot the film every Tuesday for a year, and it's set every Tuesday for a year. And the kind of characters grew out of that. And because I come from a queer family, those things and those concerns and the feelings in it kind of came out of that as well. And then I guess this one comes from a kind of impulse of telling a story that's very close to my family. It came from that first, and then it grew out of that. But for sure, like, the last 2 films that I've made, I had been working with other writers who had bought me the films, and I really loved that process of going and working with writers. But I definitely felt like it was a moment where I wanted to kind of, you know what? Like, every film is so personal, and I feel very revealed showing every film. It almost was like, okay, let's just put it on the table and just, like, just be transparent about it.
Your sister Alice was asked about what happened after Jinpa, the real Jinpa, after he died, and she said, "I had a breakdown and she made a film." What did the writing and the filmmaking process, offer you at that time?
Whoa, what did it offer me? Like, it feels like what we're talking about is like this therapizing idea, but making a film doesn't feel like therapy. It feels so much less close to you than when you're putting it out like we are now, do you know? What it feels like is what you always do, which is like, what do I care about saying and how am I going to turn my feelings into something for an audience, do you know? More than like, how am I going to transform my own feelings somehow in me? But for sure, there are times where my sister's a very emotional person and she lives those emotions out loud. And sometimes I had to contend with the fact that I felt very cold and I was like, I'm making a story. And sometimes Olivia Colman would be with me and she's like, how do I do this bit without crying? Like, how does this character not just fall apart? And I was like, cold. Just cold-hearted. No, I wasn't. I was like, she's determined to do the thing that she thinks is what she needs to do. And so you are drawing on things of yourself, but also what's necessary for a film. And you have an actor like Olivia who's so warm and so porous and ready to kind of respond that you can play with that line of like, when are we going to release that and when are we going to hold that back? So it just feels like making any kind of piece of art.
I think when you first started writing the film, there was a sense of that it was difficult to divorce the characters from the people that you were writing them about, because it was, in one sense, in a time of processing. And then once we got into actually making the movie, like, as happens when you're making a movie, you bring in so many collaborators and they all bring their lives and their stories and what they have to say, and it becomes so much less sort of isolated in your little bubble of what you were originally making it about. And also, like, you have to play characters, and so those characters become their own people. And then, yeah, it's been a little bit of a contrast to how we made it coming out into the world and being like, oh, right, yes, when I played myself. No, so it's like seen much more starkly, I think.
Actually, on that Aud, I was thinking about there's so many lines of dialogue that really struck a chord with me, and I understand that the starting point of actually making this film was imagining what your relationship with Jim Parr might have sort of developed into. And your character refers to him as a hero, and of course, as you know, the common proverb, never to meet your heroes, as they're going to disappoint. I wondered for you, having that duality of, yes, you're playing the character of Francis, but this is also your family, and then you're also acting as sort of a representative, I suppose, for all these really complex histories, like queer histories and identities. So how did you approach the role and kind of maintain a control over that duality, or did you allow for it to blur?
Yeah, I don't know that I did maintain a control, maybe, is what I would say. It's always really blurry. That's my non-binary-ness speaking, I think. But growing up in a filmmaking family, there's always been a sense that, to some extent, every movie that you make is inspired by, or there's an emotional truth that is very real from our lives. And sometimes that feels really pointy, and sometimes less so. And I think, well, you taught me very much to not try to sharpen the edges of those things, like to accept that it will be a little bit blurry, and, you know, that we're both mother and child and also collaborators and director and actor and friends and all these other things. And so I think a lot of the time I just sort of surrendered to that blurriness. But also I realised pretty early on in kind of interrogating Francis as a character that they're very different from me. And I think a lot more timid, a lot less sure of themselves. They're less of an advocate, I think. And I also think it's really interesting that you bring this word hero in, because like that's the last line of the movie is, "You're my hero," Hannah says it to Francis. And that line for me has changed meaning like 20 or 30 times in the making of this film. And I think even now, like we'll step in and watch those last kind of 5 minutes with an audience often. And every time that line happens, I go, oh, you know, I kind of have a different emotional response. And I think it's because it's such a, like a heavy word. Like it's a very beautiful thing to be someone's hero, or to hold a legacy, or to be given a responsibility, or the honor of representing a community. And it's also a really heavy responsibility at the same time. And those things, particularly when you're a young person, but I think probably at any stage of life, are sobering realities. You know, to be a trans person in the public eye right now is kind of, it's a sobering thing. And I think for Jim, the real Jim, and also the fictional Jim, to be an openly gay, you know, HIV positive man in the time that he was also very sobering. And I think, yeah, it's like a heavy responsibility to be people's hero.
And I think especially with some of those identities where we're not seeing enough of them on screen, then that kind of gets amplified, doesn't it? Because it's
usually,
like there's
yeah.
fewer and therefore
more expected of each of
yeah,
them.
Yeah, absolutely. Daniel, I am curious, your role in this film is really quite tricky in a lot of ways. You actually don't have a tremendous amount of dialogue, but a lot is being communicated physically and through these like micro gestures on your face. And I know you're a father yourself. What are you bringing to this role? Like, does this feel personal to you? Because it's obviously someone else's personal story, but where do you situate yourself in the character?
I think Soph gave me the opportunity to play like someone I would love to be. More often than not. And also you have to honour the fact that this person is a fictionalised version of a real person that's very close to these two beautiful people. And he is a very beautiful person in his own right, and has his own history and importance to the development of these two gorgeous folks. So there's a responsibility, so you have to play the person in that, as we discussed, the person in the script. So column A, column B, column C. So I said very early on, it'd be just really nice if you could be there.
I said
thank you. If you can imagine what it would be to be the best version of a parent or a friend or a partner, which is constancy, which is availability, which is present. And to be given that opportunity was delicious. I actually don't like speaking a lot on camera. I fucking hate it. I much prefer to be still and watching. So someone to say, just be there, was like, thank you. And then to be able to go, I love you through my presence. I love you, I support you through my presence. I appreciate you through my presence. I trust you in all the mistakes you're gonna make, and I know the things that could be better in the situation, especially with Hannah. But I trust that this is the love and the respect I give that person is to allow them to continue on saying what they're saying that might get them into trouble or not. And so just being there is the goal, you know? And that's what I've been about. I wish I could do that. Because I'm like, to be still and be there and still have so much presence.
I just really want to sort of dig back down into some of the emotional landscape of this film. I feel as though shame is such a powerful weapon in keeping marginalised voices and communities silent and in the shadows. And it's a really hard thing to shake, I think, because it often resides so deep in our bodies. I think making a film about your family, your story, seems sort of really an antidote to shame. And I wonder what this experience of opening yourself up in this way has been like for you.
Shame is powerful. I mean, I hold it in my body, not just from my own self, but from my dad and my mom. And we hold these things across generations, I think. And there is a decision that my dad made in particular, and my mom helped him with that, to live really fully as himself. And to do that in a way that was, you know, difficult and messy and hurtful at times. But honestly, it gave us a very big gift, which is a kind of liberation from the idea that we have to fit into kind of a script that's pre-written for us. And it's kind of the gift of queerness, do you know, as well, is like, how do we break free from a kind of the status quo or a social norm that we believe we need to be inside of? I think that's it. It doesn't take away shame, obviously. Like, the world is telling us things all the time, you know, and the world is constantly saying, you know, you're other, you don't fit into something. For all of us, I think. Like, how do you be a woman that's invisible and quiet and tiny and all the things a woman is supposed to be? How do you be a man that never feels anything? You know, like, we have many things that tell us how to be that are very difficult to live up to. We had an interview today where we got asked very specifically about my experience in school. And I'm bringing this in because, like, you saying the word shame was like, oh, a little shock to my system of like, yeah, I think we made this film actually with a huge absence of shame. Or maybe I should say, like, the thing we put on screen is fairly absent of shame. But I think, as I'm discovering going through the world as a queer and trans adult, even from a family that is full of queerness and gayness and LGBT people and a huge amount of support, the shame sort of still exists as an undercurrent in your life. And, you know, I was talking about my experience in school today, and it's similar to that of Frances. Like, that's probably one of the things that's the most truthful on screen, of being like an advocate in your school and being treated by your peers as an elder, even when you're younger than them sometimes. And the feeling of imposter syndrome, but also the kind of the shame of not really being able to transfer what your experience, what your lived experience is to the people at home, to the people at school, you know, like not being able to communicate effectively what it feels like to be in the world. And I think that actually, so much of the bravery of the characters in this movie, and I hope the bravery of us putting it on screen, has been just doing it ashamed. But, like, without displaying that. Just being like, okay, here we are, like, and we're feeling that, but that's not the point. But, you know, part of the impulse for me to put this film on screen was that I really longed for my dad to be able to speak to Ord, as Ord came into that kind of queer and trans identity and was speaking publicly about it. I felt there was this thing where they were kind of standing at the front line of this thing, and I knew there was going to be attacks and really hard stuff going on, and I'd watched that from my dad, you know, I'd seen him go through that, and I really wanted them to be able to talk about that, but I also really wanted them to talk about that amazing freeing thing that happens when you decide to be yourself in the world, and then to talk about the kind of joy that comes with that, and the love and appreciation. And so It's not like it's all like, we're all ashamed. It's like, how do you live with doubt? How do you live with shame and kind of keep moving in through that?
Well, you learn that all the other things are more rewarding than the shame is punishing, right? Like to be here in this room with all of you is more rewarding than the punishment would be of the shame. Like, it matters more. The reward is greater.
Just picking up on that thread, with the multiplicity of histories that are kind of on display, the most affecting part for me, and it's a really simple creative decision that you made, but having these moments in which each character, well, most characters are introduced with these little videos, photos of them from their childhood, from their youth. That for me got me every time, and even when I knew it was happening, I was like, oh. But there's something so beautiful about capturing that, particularly, you know, I was thinking about the gay men who are in Jinpa's circle, mm-hmm. and what they would have gone through in the history, particularly with like the AIDS memorial quilts and those sorts of things. I thought there's such a powerful history being captured in this. It really allows for a multiplicity because there's so much specificity in this being your story, your family. And I thought that was a really interesting creative decision. How did that come about? Had you seen that used somewhere or where were you drawing from?
No, I definitely haven't seen it, but it's kind of from a few different things. One is like when you're standing with someone that you know, you're kind of thinking back through different times that you've been with them, but also things that you know about them that you might not have been there for. Like those memories and those imaginings are kind of always with us as we're experiencing the world. We're not just kind of these bodies in space. We're like that. And I was always very, I came out of documentary originally, and I was always very interested in this kind of documentary idea of pointing outside of the frame, that it was like that. Sometimes I just, you cast a film and you cast someone in a role and sometimes they're considered like dad and you get someone who looks like dad. Or you get someone who looks like they have a whole other life that you're like, I might not see this life now, but I believe they have a whole other thing happening. And these are kind of an extension of that. Like there is this whole world for each of these characters and there is the biggest thing in this film that we were looking at is like the many versions of a story. And so the many versions of everyone's story is kind of where that came from, but they were like, we always wanted to have them, the imagining, and they kind of needed to also work as like maybe they're Hannah's movie and maybe they're fake and maybe they're real, and but we had a really amazing team. Some of them are here: Matthew Chuang, the cinematographer, Bethany Ryan, the production designer, Renata, our costume designer. Like these people created them. Without those people, those things are impossible, because what they did was we made 70 flashbacks in 5 days with a cast in Australia doing all the young characters. And
some of the cast is in the room as well.
And some of the cast is Hugh Jackson. Yeah, there's a few who live. And they, you know, to kind of create that, to kind of create a lived-in feel, we did these great things where we would share our images, not just kind of put up our mood boards, but share images together and talk about why we liked them. And there's a lot of photographic references and trying to find things that were like off-center or not kind of sort of too overly created, but of course they're created, you know. And though it was an amazing kind of opportunity to do that. But then you go, you look around, I'm looking at all of you, and if I imagine you all as children, I'm like, oh my God, how cute and sweet you all are. Like, I love you, like if you look at me, like you're like, oh my gosh, we're all just these little children running around, like trying to be like armored and, you know.
I think that was the power of the flashbacks. It's actually something Kate Box said to me, which is if you can imagine someone as a kid, you're gonna love them 10 times more. And I really do think it's true. And like this movie needed to be really loving. Like we just had like a huge ensemble, and it would be so easy to just get really overwhelmed. Like when you're reading a new novel and there's so many names, and you're like, oh my God, who are all these people? And instead we were like, well, yeah, and it was such a strong vision from you of like, we need to feel like we know and love these people when they're young, so that we can just come straight in with love without needing to understand straight away.
And that you might also go like, oh my God, I really wish I knew that person, but that's okay too, because like we should be interested in all of those stories, you know, rather than just like wishing for that in this particular movie. Yeah.
As an executive producer, and also because we're family and we kind of made this film about our family, more than anything, it was consultation. And so I felt very much that we kind of crafted Frances together, and also that you know, the kind of specificities of how their non-binariness and transness shows up that is visible, I was very able to be part of the process of figuring all of those kind of specificities out. Like the sex scene, for example, like we kind of debated on whether they are wearing a binder and what that means and whether they keep it on or whether there's a, you know, like all of that was kind of, we would talk about those details to no end. And so I suppose there was an element of self-advocacy in that you're advocating for kind of like, what representation haven't we seen? You know, what do I want to see? What's true to me as a person? What would be true to Francis? But mostly it didn't feel like self-advocacy in the same way that like being in a room full of cisgender people who have never met another trans person and really having to kind of do a bunch of caveats and talk about yourself and constantly correct misgendering and that kind of, like, it didn't feel like that. There's always an element of that, like you're working with a crew of 100 plus people and not everyone can be well practiced in all of those things all the time, and that's just like part of being a human in the world. So there was also an element of that kind of minute everyday self-advocacy. You know, the entire creative team was incredibly supportive, and also we had a lot of trans and gender diverse and gender expansive people on our sets, in the room with us. I guess it never felt like the burden was entirely on me, which was a huge change from almost every other space I've ever been in my life. So yeah.
And yeah, Aud was a huge part of like the development of the character. And so yes, if you come into something as someone with a lived experience, you do bring, and there is a kind of bearing a weight of that, you know, sometimes. And it can be heavy and it can sometimes be respected and looked to. And I hope, you know, we talked a lot about what to do with this character and how to make them different from Aud, like, and in that writing process and sort of what we wanted to kind of share. And so that was a big thing. But also the idea of bringing a, like, queer and trans crew around us was really important as well, because it just meant that that was a conversation that was always kind of happening and evolving, and there was different perspectives, you know, there as well.
And that's a wrap. That was all about Jimper. And the director, Sophie Hyde, and the other people who are involved. It's still on. It's worth going to see. Coming up next is Published or Not.
I don't speak my father's native tongue. I was born under a southern sun. I don't know where I belong. I don't know where I belong.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au. You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.